C1B, 1 and 2.
Number 3B.
So one always feels that there is a logicity in truth that brings forth the idea at the right time. For instance, think about it. I don't know if you like now the textbook and the way it is presented, if you really like to feel that if one can read the textbook structurally and according to system, that it makes more sense. I have a feeling that you feel that way. But that I have shouted from the housetops 25 years ago, you see? But nobody listened. But nobody listened. So that structure book is already a generation old, which is very old for a scientific book today, because, you know, in physics, in chemistry, in any science, a scientific textbook lasts about 4 years, and then it is obsolete. It's no more up to date. And here we have presentations of a subject that are already 25, 30, 35 years old and are still premature. It's still not seen. So we have to wait a little bit longer. But science has also within itself the idea of love. I showed now that science has the idea of life as acceleration, of truth as the inner logicity, but also one begins to see that the idea of science is of the nature of love. Because love is what? Love is that inner determination to bring everything to a point of fulfillment. And therefore is that inner determination to use every development in the plane of love to bring it to that point of perfection where the whole plane of love is fulfilled. So love brings into this whole development a goal-directed sense, a purpose-directed sense. So love is that which says, I don't let the development of a right idea disintegrate. I am that power, I am that intelligence, which is responsible to see that the right idea of science will be fulfilled. And I direct the development of the steps within this science so that it can fulfill its goal. Whereas all the other sciences are not goal-directed. This science, the science of science itself, they begin to see are goal-directed, and they also see that they operate in such a way that they always drive towards a optimal solution. That science never rests until an optimal solution is found. It doesn't leave a discovery on the halfway, but it pushes it right to the fulfillment so that there is fundamentally in love a right way and the right aim and the power to push everything towards the fulfillment of that right aim. You see, this is what the scientists begin to recognize. And naturally, if you would say, well, does that somehow coincide and support Mrs. Eddy's concept of the science of God, we would have to say, yes, that's exactly. She says she discovered the laws of life, truth and love. It is those laws of life which have that multiplication sense within itself, the sense of spontaneity, the sense of multiplication, acceleration. It's the laws of truth which say there is only truth at work and therefore there is only the logicity of truth at work. For what purpose? For the purpose of law of love, the law of love, namely to bring everything to the point of salvation, of complete salvation. Yeah. Okay. Now, let's look at another field in human sciences and see, is it actually so that the world will help the woman? Is it actually so that in the world there is an insight and a revelation going on that is supporting the general trend that Mrs. Eddy could see? Let's take the realm of the more the technological field. The technological field was always considered to be a field of hard stuff, matter. You were using the wonderful theories of physics and then applied to matter. And I just always had a feeling that technology is just something that has to be with blunt materiality, certainly nothing to do with metaphysics, but that has changed too. One begins to realize now that there is a metaphysical system at work underlying the technical inventions and the technical discoveries. So again, we have a support of that sentence in Mrs. Eddy that she says, well, thoughts with pinion are rising with great rapidity and are bringing forth many useful wonders, but that swift thought always goes back to a cause, to a spiritual cause, which is the cause of those lower things which give impulse to inquiry, which bring about the technical development and the technical results. Those who are interested in the metaphysical aspect of technology, like, for instance, the Frenchman Thibaut Raymond, a very interesting writer, he already began to see at the beginning of this century that technical inventions always develop towards an optimal solution. And you have again the sense of love in it, that there is somehow behind the whole technical age an idea that says, I don't rest until the highest solution, technical solution, or solution even in technology is found and brought out. He says that for a definite purpose in the technical field, that there exists an unmistakable and perfect solution, which exists timelessly. He could see that inventions didn't start with an inventor, that the inventor is already the one that has been thought of by a bigger mind than his mind. So that these technical inventions has always existed in the timeless realm of being. For instance, he says that the principle of a dynamo as an idea is timeless, just as a law of nature is timeless. Therefore, it is not invented, but that it is discovered. Something that is discovered, naturally has always been there, but it was covered up, and one has to take the veil away from it. One doesn't have to make it, but only to take away the veil that was veiling that which already exists. So they say that the inventions which we enjoy today existed forever, since ever, which means that the inventions which we are going to make in the future exist already now in the realm of ideas, that we don't have to make them. And so they show that there is actually a metaphysical idea behind the technical age. Another one, like Tessauer, some 30 years ago or so, began to see that there is, for every precisely defined technical problem, one optimal solution. And that that optimal solution is possible, he says, because that solution exists in the pre-stabilized realm of technical ideas. Similar, therefore, to the Platonic idea, who also saw that everything is idea, and that whatever happened is just the shadow world of those ideas. And so also here we have a sense that every state of problem has within itself an optimal solution. Therefore, we can see that somebody engaged in engineering, in the technology of our age, which is quite sophisticated today, that a Christian scientist has a place to play in it. He doesn't have to say, well, this is material, and as a Christian scientist, I believe that creation is spiritual, and only spiritual, and matter is error, and therefore feels that he shouldn't be concerned with the technical aspect of the world, that it would be much more spiritual to sit on the Himalaya and look up into the sky and meditate on something, but that he can see now. There is nothing in the world that has an other cause but the spiritual cause. As Mrs. Eddy said, that we must go back to that cause that is mind, and that mind is the cause of every effect. Therefore, we can see an engineer would be a man that would know, and he's a Christian scientist, that would know, if he's a Christian scientist, that he does not have to invent new ideas, optimal solutions. But it would be one who would know that those optimal solutions already exist in that pre-stabilized realm of technical ideas. That's an expression one has from Leibniz. He has begun to see that already. So that instead of using his human thinking and reasoning in the first place to discover and to invent something, he goes back first to the cause of the thinking, to the divine mind, realizing that the divine mind knows already all, that for the divine mind nothing is unknown, that in the divine mind all optimal solution exists already as an idea, and therefore he is much more ready to be a transparent mentality for that optimal solution to break through his mentality and become thought, and that thought would see the solution. Can you see again what Mrs. Eddy said in the chapter on creation as a preparatory chapter for this 10th chapter, where she said, how are really spiritual thought produced? Do we produce them, or where are they coming from? You know that sentence there in the first paragraph on the Big Tone of Life, where she said that there is a divine mind. That divine mind sends through divine science what? Sends through divine science ideas. What do these ideas do? They first correct error with truth within us, and as the idea corrects error with truth, yes, that brings forth spiritual thoughts, divine concepts. Now it becomes thoughts for the purpose of what? That they produce harmonious effects. Can you see in that one sentence that there is described the whole creativity of ideas, and that creativity does not start with man thinking intelligently or consecratedly about something, accumulating a lot of data, but it begins right back with the divine mind, transmitted by divine science, transmitted as what? First as ideas. These ideas sorting out what is erroneous in one's consciousness, usually sorting out our limited concepts, so as to form what? Divine spiritual thoughts. For what purpose? That they would produce harmonious results. That's the whole trend. And we can see that usually people start in the middle of that whole development with thinking instead of with mind. So we find here that Dessauer says that an invention is therefore the discovery of pre-stabilized forms of solution, and that therefore technicians translate only potential existence of pre-existing forms into actual realities of our world of experience. So the inventor is only a translator, so to say. He is not really inventing something. The most he can do is to discover something. And so they come to the point that they say there exists a transcendental nature of technology. Well, this is what the world begins to see nowadays. It always reminds me of Kimball's letter he once wrote to Hinsdale, that famous Hinsdale letter, in which he had to defend his teaching, and where he said, if Adam had known enough, he would have had a piano, because nothing would have prevented him to have a piano. He had everything what was needed there, wood and sinews or whatever you call that. He had had everything. But what was missing is the ideas, the combination of ideas. But we can't say he couldn't have a piano. He could have had it. So the piano existed really as a pre-existing form in the realm of reality, but was not yet translated to the reality of present-day existence. Again, we begin to see what Mrs. Eddy said in the chapter on creation when we read there, that whatever seems to be a new creation is but the discovery of some distant idea of truth. She uses that expression as a distant idea of truth. Perhaps today we would use the more philosophical question of saying of a pre-stabilized idea in the realm of truth. Yes. Well, that's what I wanted to show you as examples of how Mrs. Eddy could see that there are not two evolutions taking place, neither in the biological field, nor in the philosophical field, nor in the science field, nor in the technological field. You could go on and on. You could take the field of art, and you would find the same thing stated there. I just don't want to go through all the various sciences, but it's wonderful to see that over the last 20, 30 years, this idea has just come to the surface, that the attitude is exactly the opposite of what it was up to that point. As if we would have another great world axis in this century, where everything turns right to the other side, just as you had it in the 6th century before Christ, in that world axis where all the old religion really, or the high religion, began to be conceived of, where at the same time all over the ancient world something terrific happened. In Greece we had the birth of science and philosophy. In Israel, we had the prophets coming in and shouting from the housetops. We had in Persia, Zarathustra. We had in India, I guess, Buddha. And so over the whole world, at that point, everything was ready to be overthrown, to be overturned. And it seems that we are living in another atmosphere where everything that had been accepted now since the Greek period in the Western world, and where we have been living on the Greek thinking for now 2,500 years, that something terrific happens, that everything is overthrown. That we look at things exactly from the opposite standpoint as before. And this makes this age so exciting, but it also makes this age perhaps a bit bewildering for many people who are not able to think or do not want to think. But for those who want to think, this age is so full of adventure that it seems to be one of the most beautiful centuries to live in over the last 200 or 2,000 years. But we must naturally understand the signs of the time. This is important, that we are not blind to the signs of the time and begin to realize what is actually happening today. We come into a completely new era, and we already have touched on various points of this new era in these few days. We have been seeing that we have to exchange the old paradigm of atomistic thinking into a holistic way of thinking. We have seen that the linear understanding of any subject is an old paradigm. It must be exchanged for a new paradigm where we are no more thinking linearly, but structurally, synchronically, that we can no more read the textbook diachronically, that we now have to read the textbook synchronically, that we have therefore to educate ourselves out of an old approach and re-educate us into a complete new approach. That therefore also the purpose or the aim of Christian Science is suddenly a completely different one. It's not the aim of Christian Science is no more how can I heal? How can I solve my problems? It's now suddenly to ask what is the higher demonstration? Is not the higher demonstration the preventive art? Not to get into difficulty, to build up a new consciousness that is immune against falling away from the true standard of being, so that our consciousness cannot be touched anymore by misunderstanding. We are certainly in an age where we begin to see that there are not two evolutions at work. There we see that spirit and matter are not two opposite facts, but that they are states and stages of consciousness, that therefore there is only one being, and that that one being, when seen through the lens of science, through the microscope of spirit, is seen as spirit, and when we look through the lens of limitation, of sense testimony, that we see a world of matter and material laws. But it's still the same world. There is only one world. There is only one being. The very fact that we can look from different standpoint at the same thing doesn't mean that that thing is two things. We have only one universe, and therefore the material so-called universe is the spiritual universe not clearly seen, not clearly understood. And in the world of thinkers, we already have that insight, like Weizsäcker, that said, that defines matter now as spirit when spirit is not understood. This is exactly what Mrs. Eddy says, that matter is not something per se. It's not an identity per se that must be destroyed. If there is only one universe, a monistic universe, a monistic substantial universe, then we cannot have a spiritual universe and next to it the material universe. All that we can have is one universe. But looked at that one universe, it appears at one time spiritual, and another time when we look through the lens of our eyes, it looks to be material. But it only looks to be. It isn't. The looking at things does not make a thing to be what it is. The approach to the thing does not make a thing to be what it is. The thing is always what it is per se. So we begin to realize more and more, you see, that it is a matter of changing our consciousness. That is the only thing that matters. We don't have to change reality. That cannot be changed. We don't need to change a material world into a spiritual, because they don't exist. You cannot change a material universe into a spiritual if there is no material universe. You just can't do that. But we can change a wrong approach to that universe and can change it to a right approach to that universe. That we can do. But reality remains what it is. And so these are the great points that one has to stress today in order to see the bigness of Mrs. Eddy's contribution as science and health.